Welcome to the Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Mary Beth Maziarz. Today on The Mountain Life, we're talking about how to stay healthier longer. Dr. Michael Greger, physician, best-selling author, and founder of nutritionfacts.org, joins us to share what's new in the revised and updated edition of his hit book, How Not to Die.
He breaks down the latest science on preventing and even reversing our leading causes of death, from heart disease to diabetes, and explains how simple everyday food choices can dramatically extend our health span.
We'll ask what surprised him in the new research, which habits make the biggest difference, and how we can all start living better starting today. Dr. Michael Greger, welcome back to The Mountain Life.
I'm so glad to be back.
Well, I have to say, your affect is very enthusiastic and vibrant. So you must be really walking the walk of what you write about in your books. You seem like an aggressively healthy person.
Well, I mean, I would actually be walking the walk. I'm standing on my treadmill desk, but it's off at the moment just because it gets a little distracting with me bobbing back and forth. I don't want to make anybody seasick.
Well, we appreciate that because even though this is radio, we do our interviews sometimes seeing each other, which is so nice. Well, we are all excited that your hit book, How Not to Die, has been updated and revised. A lot of people responded to this book. It seemed like it really presented the information in a way that they could understand and apply. First, let's go back for a moment and say, what do you think was the strongest impact on this book in its original form for most people?
Well, I mean, I think it's this recognition, this realization that many of our lifestyle diseases are not just preventable, but actually arrestable and reversible. I mean, I think that's the difference between, preventive medicine and lifestyle medicine. And I think that's what the book brought together for many people. And that's actually how my journey started. For me, it all started with my grandmother, actually. I was just a kid when the, doctor sent my grandma home in a wheelchair to die, since she was diagnosed with end-stage heart disease. She already had so many bypass operations, she basically ran out of plumbing at some point, confined to a wheelchair, crushing chest pain. Her life was essentially over at age 65. But then she heard about this guy, Nathan Pritikin, one of our early lifestyle medicine pioneers. And what happened next is actually detailed in Pritikin's biography. It talks about Frances Greger, my grandmother. They wheeled her in and she walked out. Though she was given her medical death sentence at age 65, thanks to a healthy diet, she went on to enjoy another, 31 years on this planet until age 96 to continue to enjoy her six grandkids, including me. So that's why I went into medicine. That's why I started the website nutritionfacts.org, why I wrote the book, How Not to Die, and why 100% of the proceeds I receive from all my books are donated directly to charity. I just want to do for everyone's family what Pritikin did for my family.
Wow, that's amazing that that was your grandmother. Pritikin was a groundbreaker for sure. I do think that he was pretty intense about how he structured and how strict he felt that we should all be. Before we jump into everything with it, do you feel that we've been able to relax some of his protocols a little bit and still get great results?
Well, he recognized this is life and death, right? I mean, the Global Burden of Disease Study, which is the largest study of disease risk factors in history, funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, found that the number one cause of death in these United States is the American diet, bumping tobacco smoking to number two. Cigarettes not only kill about 500,000 Americans every year, whereas our diet kills many more. So it's like the single most important decision we make for the health and well-being of our families. He recognized this back in the 70s. And so, that was not the time for moderation. He was like, basically, yeah, sure, you could, hit yourself with a smaller hammer, but why beat yourself up at all? I mean, having said that, one need not make drastic changes to get benefit, right? It's not all or nothing. Even just basic, common sense lifestyle behaviors can mean living literally a decade longer, not smoking, not being obese, regular exercise, more fruits and vegetables. And it's never too late, right? Never too late to stop smoking, to move more, to start eating healthier. We really do have the power.
Dr. Greger, I'm wondering, take us back to when you were in medical school. I mean, you were inspired by lifestyle medicine. But what was your training in medical school? I mean, it seems that, MDs are trained to treat acute illness and disease, and not necessarily for lifestyle medicine. That's more of a last couple decades sort of thing. But you went in from the get-go with this in your head. So talk to us a little bit about how you were trained and how all doctors are trained.
Yeah, unfortunately, doctors have a severe nutrition deficiency in education, right? Most doctors are just never taught about the impact healthy nutrition can have in the course of illness, and so they graduate without this powerful tool in their medical toolbox. Now, there's also, institutional barriers, time constraints, lack of reimbursement. Generally, doctors aren't kind of paid for counseling people on how to take better care of themselves, though. Drug companies also play a role in influencing medical education and practice. You can, ask your doctor when's the last time they're taken out to dinner by Big Broccoli. It's probably been a while, right? But basically, it's like smoking back in the 50s, right? We already had, by the 50s, decades of science linking smoking with lung cancer, but it was ignored because smoking was normal, right? Most doctors smoke. The average per capita cigarette consumption, 4,000 cigarettes a year, meaning the average person walking around smoked half pack a day, right? The American Medical Association was reassuring everyone that smoking in moderation, right, was okay, right? There was this disconnect between the science and public policy. It took more than 25 years and 7,000 studies before the first Surgeon General's report against smoking came out in the 1960s, right? Until the system changes, we need to take personal responsibility for our own health, for our family's health, right? We can't wait until society catches up to the science again because it's a matter of life and death.
Yeah. You came out with How Not to Die about 10 years ago. This is the revised and updated version. Have you been overjoyed with the outcome that you've seen since you first published the book? Have you been disappointed? What are the biggest, takeaways that you've had in the last 10 years about our health as Americans and our diet?
There's definitely some great progress being made. Certainly, the evidence supporting the extraordinary power of healthier choices has only grown stronger over the last decade. And what we've seen is it's finally starting to get put into some public policy. So thanks in part to wonderful organizations like American College of Lifestyle Medicine. For example, look at the biggest city in the country, New York City. All 11 public health hospitals, there's 11 hospitals that all have, as a default, for every lunch and supper, whole food plant-based meals. Meaning, I mean, healthy food in a hospital? Like, what a concept. Mind-blowing, right? And so there's this great role modeling behavior for patients, and they're actually saving money too. Like, it's a win-win-win for everybody. And so there's great organizations like Greener by Default, for example, that have worked with over 700 hospitals at this point, trying to get healthier meals. They work with corporate cafeterias and schools and senior centers, trying to, make healthier choices the default choices. No one's taking away anything, any choices for anybody. We're just trying to make healthier eating easier for everyone, more convenient, so they can make the best choices for themselves and their families.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. We're very lucky here in Park City. Our hospital has a terrific chef and they have wonderfully nutritious options. There, people
I
used to
love
go to the hospital just to eat lunch, which is unheard of,
You don't hear that every day.
You really, you really, really don't. But it's really, really good.
That's like saying, yeah, I take plane flights so I can eat the lunch. It's
Like
just
to
like that's just
relax
not
on the
happening.
plane. I find I'm able to get great work done. So, let's talk about some very applicable recommendations. What are some things at the very top of your list that we should consider doing right now to help ourselves not die sooner or live less healthfully than we wish?
Well, based on studies of identical twins, only about 25% of the difference in lifespan between people is due to genetics. So, for what we can do, over the majority of which we have some control, we can look to the blue zones, these areas of exceptional longevity around the world. where, in addition to lifestyle factors such as movement and stress reduction and social connection, they all center their diets around whole plant foods. So they're minimizing processed foods, meat, dairy, sugar, eggs, salt, while maximizing fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, beans, split peas, chia peas, and lentils, nuts and seeds, mushrooms, herbs, and spices, basically real food that grows out of the ground. These are our healthiest choices.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And what do you tell people who may argue that, oh, it takes so much time to prep all that stuff and to wash the veggies? Like, I think sometimes people use the explanation or the excuse that it's just easier to grab something that's a processed food. You know, it's easier to grab a power bar and feel like we're being healthy because there's protein in it and it, you know, whatever.
Anyone who doesn't know how to eat a healthy diet conveniently has never met an apple. I mean, come on. Even the packaging is edible. Like, it's just like, seriously, there's just no excuse not to eat healthy food, regardless of what the processed food industry wants us to think.
I love that. Even the packaging is edible, which, as we know, packaging is just is it is all part of this, all this stuff wrapped up in our healthy lifestyle or lack thereof. Michael, I wanted to ask you about some of the acronyms, the initials after your name. Of course, there is MD, but there is also this thing that means the lifestyle medicine. Oh, tell me what it is. Sorry, I'm
He
blanking
is
on it.
a fellow of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine. I was honored with a Trailblazer Award that they gave out, and I'm board certified in lifestyle medicine as well.
Okay. So it's FACLM. Is that an acronym that we should be looking for? I mean, we have actually, as Mary Beth mentioned, Park City Hospital has a lifestyle medicine department that's wonderful. And by the way, Mary Beth, I still go to have lunch at the restaurant at the hospital, breakfast too. So is this an acronym we should be looking for regularly?
I'm it is one of the fastest growing specialties in medicine these days, lifestyle medicine. I mean, it's possible for people to self-train in lifestyle medicine and understand nutrition, but if you're board certified in lifestyle medicine, then at least we know that there are some standards by which they're set up. People can call themselves a nutritionist or something. That doesn't really mean anything. At least if we know that that they've kind of passed the test, this kind of rigorous test to make sure at least they have the knowledge. Now, look, just because they have the knowledge doesn't mean that they're necessarily putting the knowledge into practice in the right way, right? So it's no guarantee. But yeah, I would ask your doctor if they have if they're a member of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, if they've gone to any of the conferences, if they've looked at any of the continuing medical education that's being offered, and because I mean, I think it can help reignite the idealistic spark that led many people into medicine. But primary care these days is very frustrating in practice. About 80% of the patients coming in have these, chronic lifestyle diseases like high blood pressure and type 2 diabetes and heart disease, et cetera. And, if we just kind of, prescribe pills and procedures, our patient, we can slow down the rate at which our diabetics go blind and lose their kidney function, go on dialysis, lose their lower limbs. But if we want to actually reverse the disease, get rid of their type 2 diabetes, normal blood sugars on a normal diet, well, then we have to treat the underlying cause, the lifestyle that led to the diabetes in the first place. And many doctors just don't have that knowledge. They just don't have that. But that doesn't mean they can't get that knowledge. And so, yeah, absolutely would encourage practitioners to educate themselves. And I'm a little hesitant to encourage people to switch to lifestyle medicine doctors because the lifestyle medicine doctors already know what they're doing. I want people to tell their own doctors so that they'll educate themselves. Because when you go to these conferences and you ask your colleagues, how did you learn about this? Obviously, you didn't learn about this in medical school. It's often a patient A patient came to them that, they've known forever, they've known their family forever, and they had all these problems, and all of a sudden, the patient's better. They lost all this weight. They have to start deprescribing all these medications because they find themselves over-medicated. And the doctor's like, "What did you do? This is amazing." And the patient will be like, "Oh, I went to this website or watched this documentary or read this great book, and I started, doing X, Y, and Z." And in the back of their mind, the doctor's like, "Oh my God, I got like thousands of patients just like you." And the thought of a doctor actually making people better, like, I mean, that's the lay hands, jump out of the wheelchair kind of moment, which is why we all go into medicine in the first place. And so it's good for the doctor, it's good for the patients. Let's educate all of our all of our doctors about the potential for making their patient population healthier.
Yes. If you're just joining us on the Mountain Life, we're speaking with Dr. Michael Greger. He's the founder of nutritionfacts.org and also the author of the best-selling book, How Not to Die. It's been revised and updated since it was published initially 10 years ago. Dr. Greger, I feel like sometimes we just need the little din in the head, the little thing that we can take throughout our day. It's almost like, people say when they get up and they make their bed in the morning, it's kind of that one little thing that helps them start the day feeling kind of successful. And we all find that the healthier that we feel, the healthier our habits will be. On the days that I exercise, I feel like eating healthier. It's that cycle. Give us just a few things like that that we can take through our day, that our listeners can take through their day.
No, I love that. In fact, it's that same kind of make your bed in the morning. How about eating a healthy breakfast, starting the day right? I mean, I think that's a great way to start off, because then you're like, oh my God, I started so strong. Let's not, mess it up with a donut on the way to work. Like, we're doing good, so good. And so, yeah, I think that's a great way to start. I have this Daily Dozen checklist of all the healthiest of healthy foods. I encourage people to fit into their daily diet, their daily routine. So you're not just, eat more fruits and vegetables, but specifically eat berries every day, the healthiest fruits, dark green leafy vegetables every day, the healthiest vegetables, nuts every day, the healthiest snack, legumes every day, beans, split peas, chickpeas, lentils, the healthiest source of protein, tablespoon of ground flaxseed, quarter teaspoon turmeric, the best beverages, how much exercise to get every day. Basically, again, try to inspire people to include some of these healthiest of healthy choices. It's available as a free app on iPhone, Android. You can track your progress. You can ask your viewers to just search for Dr. Greger's Daily Dozen.
That sounds good. Well, let me ask you this. I'm a person who's really sensitive to sugar, and we have a lot of diabetes and hypoglycemia in my family. And if I sit down to a bowl of even oatmeal and like steel cut oats and berries, I still get it's a little bit of a crash for me after that. Do you have any suggestions for people who might prefer a savory breakfast, what that ideal one might look like?
Oh, well, I mean, if I mean that's unusual for something with steel cutouts. I would actually try moving to groats. So
Okay.
groat, so so an oat groat is basically what you have before you cut it 2 to 3 times to make steel cutouts. So that is the holiest of whole grains, groats. So that you can get rye groats and barley groats, oat groats, and so that is kind of the lowest glycemic. Kind of breakfast you can have for kind of oat form. So I would try that. Add some berries. Adding berries, you think, well, wait a second, berries have sugar in them. Actually, adding berries, because they have this soluble fiber which gels in the stomach, has these polyphenols that actually block the absorption of sugar in the small intestine, so slow sugar absorption. So adding berries to oat groats. Takes longer to cook, but you can batch cook, once a week, and freeze, these portions. That's what I do, and so hopefully you won't kind of get that hypoglycemic crash afterwards.
I mean, it's not as bad as a humongous sugary Starbucks, don't get me wrong. That will create
Good,
the crash of all
good.
crashes, but
No, let's not do that.
no. What kind of new knowledge or understanding were you especially excited to share in this new updated edition of How Not to Die?
Well, the evidence supporting the extraordinary power of healthier choices has really only gotten stronger over the last decade. But one great example is Dr. Ornish's landmark Alzheimer's reversal study from last year, this randomized controlled phase 2 clinical trial, randomizing men and women with early stage Alzheimer's to this healthy plant-based diet and lifestyle, the same one he used to reverse heart disease. And in the control group, they made no changes. 100% stayed the same or got worse. Whereas in the diet and lifestyle group, 70% stayed the same or got better. Significant improvement in cognition 6 months later. So, I mean, that's extraordinary. The bottom line is we have this tremendous power of our health, destiny, and longevity, and that the vast majority of premature death and disability is preventable with a healthy enough diet and lifestyle.
How often do you see people reverse type 2 diabetes? I mean, you get there for a reason. You get there for some some not great lifestyle choices. How easy is it to turn around?
It depends on how long you've had it. So within the first 2 years, it's almost always reversible with a healthy enough diet, which is centered around whole plant foods. After 8 years, it drops down to about 50%, only about 50% reversible. Although there are cases in which people have type 2 diabetes for decades, and you expect by then their pancreas kind of be burned out by that point. But no, there's still cases of total reversal, meaning normal blood sugars on no drugs on a normal diet. It's never too late to give it a try. The American College of Lifestyle Medicine just this year released their guidelines on diabetes reversal, was signed on by all the major professional societies, the Endocrine Society, the Diabetes Association, and they're very explicit about the best diet for permanent remission of type 2 diabetes is this plant-predominant diet centered around whole plant foods.
A friend of mine who's very informed on healthy choices and diet and nutrition heard our promo that we were going to be interviewing you. And he texted me and he said, "Wow." And they follow you and they've bought your books.
Oh,
And
great.
he said he really scared me about fish recently.
Just talking about the kind of level of pollutants that we're now seeing in fish. Initially we thought, I mean, that the level of pollutants weren't high enough on average to lead to kind of metabolic disturbances, but unfortunately, our oceans have essentially become humanity's sewer. Everything eventually flows into the sea. Like, if we had a time machine to go back before the Industrial Revolution, that'd be one thing. But now it's the aquatic food chain that accumulates the highest levels of chemical pollutants like DDT and PCBs and dioxins. I mean, it's the tuna sandwich definitely better than a bologna, but hummus wrap would be even healthier.
What are the best choices that we can make for food out of the sea? I was at this restaurant the other day, and even the chef came out to talk about his swordfish special that he said, it's really delicious. You don't want to eat it that often because it's so full of mercury. But and so you go, oh,
I
okay.
love it. I know. No, informed consent. That's all. That's all anyone can ask, right? And look, it doesn't matter what you eat on your birthdays or holidays or special occasions, but on a day-to-day basis, you really should try to eat healthy. We're trying to eat as low as possible on the aquatic food chain. The smaller fish, the shorter-lived fish, are less likely to build up these. And so, something like swordfish. And tuna are at the top of the pyramid. They're kind of like the polar bears or the bald eagles. Since many this concept of bioaccumulation, since many of these pollutants are fat soluble, you're basically eating every fish that fish ate, in terms of the amount of mercury that is building up in their tissues. And so basically minnows, we want to eat minnows. Like, smaller, many tilapia are actually on plant-based diets. So then you're only eating kind of one step up on the food chain. If you want the healthiest plant foods out of the ocean, it would be sea vegetables. Seaweed like nori, the nori sheets that you make sushi out of. You can eat them as a snack. They're about 2 calories each, and just packed with nutrition. The only caveats I would have. Is something called hijiki, which is a type of seaweed. It actually has accumulates too much arsenic, and kelp actually has too much iodine to be safe. You can actually get an iron overload if you eat more than just tiny amounts. Also known as kombu. And so, with those two exceptions, I would encourage people to develop a taste for sea vegetables, the little dark green leafies of the sea.
Excellent.
Dr. Michael Greger is our guest. How Not to Die. It's been revised and updated. We are so pleased you could join us again. We really want to talk to you for the rest of the morning, but we can't. And I'm sure you can't either. Thank you so much
Well,
for joining us.
you are so welcome. Keep up the great work and looking forward to coming back on.
All right.
Can't wait to have you again. Thank you so much, Doctor.
Thanks for listening to The Mountain Life here on KPCW. If you like what you hear, leave us a comment, rate us, and be sure to subscribe to stay on top of all of our show episodes. And if you have an idea for a future episode of The Mountain Life, email us at themountainlife@kpcw.org.